From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. And on today's show, we are going to talk about the free exercise and free speech violations that we are seeing placed upon religious Americans by states across the country. And we're also going to talk about something pretty fascinating that happened last week when J.K. Rowling, the famed author of the Harry Potter series, it came out and defended women with a conservative Christian worldview of sex and gender, and was, of course, ensuingly attacked relentlessly by the social media mob. But she published an essay recently in response to those attacks, and we're going to share what she wrote and why it's so significant, and then we'll discuss and analyze how transgender activists view sex and gender and how we can think about this issue and respond graciously and compassionately to a very difficult issue, but one with a lot of significance in our culture and in public policy. But first, last week, Republican United States Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri sent a letter to United States Attorney General William Barr, asking him and urging the United States Department of Justice to initiate an investigation into violations of the civil rights of religious Americans around the country who have been forced to stay away from their churches while protesters have been allowed to gather in large numbers with no objection and even encouragement from state authorities who are simultaneously requiring churches to remain closed. The letter points out the unequal treatment by various states of the First Amendment rights being exercised. Senator Hawley writes, quote, "In the past few weeks, state officials across the country have blatantly violated the free exercise and free speech rights of religious Americans. Under the First Amendment, state officials must not treat religious persons and groups worse than others, and they must not favor one kind of speech over another. State officials have violated the free speech and free exercise rights of religious Americans by treating religious gatherings and speech differently than the speech and mass gatherings of protests. I urge you to launch a full civil rights investigation." And of course, this is true. It has become very evident given recent events. And of course, that's not wrong. People should be, of course, allowed to protest. They have the right to peacefully assemble. They have the right to free speech. But what's become apparent is that the First Amendment rights of religious Americans is being treated very differently than those who aren't engaging in specific religious activities. And Senator Hawley in the letter goes on to agree with the right of protesters to peacefully assemble. But he argues that the same consideration must also be given to churches. Quote, "As our Constitution allows, Americans have the right to peacefully protest. Millions of people are rightly angry about the death of George Floyd, and they should be able to protest peacefully. At the same time, state officials must not use their support for this protest to infringe the free exercise and free speech rights of religious Americans. Yet that is happening across the nation. The First Amendment prohibits state officials from treating religious individuals and groups worse than others. 2 weeks ago, in a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court denied relief to a California church. The decision tilted in favor of the state. The Chief Justice wrote, because of uncertainty about whether the church was being treated worse than comparable secular organizations. The senator also points out that the time of uncertainty is now past, writing that now, after 2 weeks of nationwide protests, no uncertainty remains. Many jurisdictions across the nation are imposing extraordinarily strict caps on religious gatherings, such as restricting religious gatherings to 10 or fewer people, even as those jurisdictions allow thousands of people to gather closely in protests. States cannot allow one but prohibit the other. Now, the United States Department of Justice has been proactive already on the issue of states treating religious individuals and organizations differently than secular ones. As we've talked about previously, and Senator Hawley concludes his letter by urging Attorney General Barr to remain engaged, open a full civil rights investigation, and bring whatever lawsuits are necessary to secure the First Amendment rights of all Americans. And hopefully that happens so people can remain safe and healthy and the rights of all Americans can be upheld. Okay, so one of the other major news items this past week that got a lot of attention and stirred up a lot of controversy was J.K. Rowling coming out in defense of women and women who are opposed or at least not aligned with the transgender movement. And she was, of course, relentlessly attacked on social media, and essentially every person who's ever appeared in a Harry Potter movie came out to rebuke what J.K. Rowling said. And if you don't know who J.K. Rowling is, she is the author, again, of the Harry Potter series, which is the number one best-selling book series of all time. And so she is someone who is definitely known in the public eye. She has fame, recognition, celebrity status behind her name. And that's why this is so significant, because that is incredibly, incredibly rare to see someone in her position step out so boldly and so publicly to denounce in no uncertain terms the transgender movement. And that, of course, brought swift backlash. And as I'll explain later, what was even more incredible is that in response to that backlash, she did not come out and apologize. In fact, she doubled down and further elaborated her beliefs in some very important and well-stated statements that she made that we'll get into. And so this all started last week when J.K. Rowling sent out some tweets in response to an article that was titled "Opinion: Creating a More Equal Post-COVID-19 World for People Who Menstruate." And so in her tweet, Rowling pointed out the obvious, that only biological women menstruate. So she wrote on Twitter, quote, "People who menstruate, I'm sure there used to be a word for those people. Someone help me out." And then she intentionally misspelled the word "women" several times with a question mark. And that, of course, set the social media world ablaze. And in response to that immediate backlash of the social media mob, Rowling defended her position and the importance of biological sex. She tweeted, quote, "If sex isn't real, there's no same-sex attraction. If sex isn't real, the lived reality of women globally is erased. I know and love trans people, but erasing the concept of sex removes the ability of many to meaningfully discuss their lives. It isn't hate to speak the truth." Well, the thread continued, and again, in response to more backlash, she wrote on Twitter, quote, "The idea that women like me, who've been empathetic to trans people for decades, feeling kinship because they're vulnerable in the same way as women, i.e. to male violence, hate trans people because they think sex is real and has lived consequences is nonsense." And finally, she wrote, quote, "I respect every trans person's right to live any way that feels authentic and comfortable to them. I'd march with you if you were discriminated against on the basis of being trans. At the same time, my life has been shaped by being female. I do not believe that it is hateful to say so." Okay, so here we have perhaps the most famous author in the entire world being not afraid to voice her opinion on a very controversial subject, and hers was, of course, not politically correct, and knew that it was not going to be well received on social media and by other Hollywood celebrities. And yet here she was defending her position and speaking truth, and in a very gracious and winsome way. And although her values do diverge at times from traditionally conservative ones, her thoughts on this issue are pretty sound and based in logic and science and truth, women are biologically different and live a much different life than men, especially in developing countries. So she is not wrong on this, and the transgender movement in many ways does minimize the lives and experiences of women in order to achieve its goals. In fact, it completely undermines the whole women's rights or feminist movement. It's been really interesting to see this play out as both of these movements are picking up steam sort of simultaneously, and we're seeing more and more of this tension between the women's rights movement and self-proclaimed feminists and those who are pushing the transgender movement, because the transgender movement absolutely undermines everything that the women's rights movement and, for example, like the Women's March, what they're saying. You know, it reminded me there's a line in the movie The Incredibles where the villain says, if everyone is super, then no one will be. And so if you completely erase what it means to be a woman and how you define womanhood and just make it entirely whatever anyone wants it to be, and anyone, including biological males who just choose to self-identify, and now they're supposed to be, you know, completely accepted and viewed in entirely the same light, it just doesn't work. And of course, no matter how someone chooses to identify, they have the same dignity and worth of any human being, and that's the most important thing, that every person is treated with dignity and respect. But it's a basic biological fact that menstruation only happens in biological women. And it's not transphobic to think or say this, nor should someone like J.K. Rowling be attacked for voicing her opinion in a very loving way. And in doing so, she is actually speaking up for women across the country and across the world who aren't able to speak that truth with that sort of platform and audience that she has. And she is right to highlight this difference, because biology, it doesn't lie. So if we can't define what a man is or what a woman is, if there's just no definition, how can someone know that they are one? And one of our good friends on the show, Joseph Backholm, who heads up the What Would You Say video project series for the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, he highlighted this disparity. Earlier this year, he attended the Women's March in Washington, D.C., and he went around and asked protesters at the Women's March to define what a woman is. And so I'm going to play this video, and you'll get to hear and really see what we're talking about here, and the conflict between these two movements and the struggle that the protesters at the Women's March have with answering a very basic question. And you'll see that I think the reason that they can't really answer the question or come up with a good answer and say all sorts of ridiculous things is because they know that they have to be, or at least try to appear that they're, you know, not going to be viewed as transphobic or get labeled as a bigot. They want to be as affirming and open as possible. You know, just everything that is constantly shoved down people's throats and that the Women's March is supposed to be about. And it comes at the expense of truth, which is the sad part about this, because we absolutely want to support women's rights, and people should always be treated equal. And so I'm going to play this video clip, and you'll see what we're talking about. This is Joseph Backholm with What Would You Say at the Women's March earlier this year.
Hey, we're at the Women's March in Washington, D.C., and today we're going to ask the Women's March, how would you define what a woman is? What would you say is the biggest obstacle to equality between men and women today?
I'm always treated differently. I think the biggest challenge is the mindset of a lot of white men in particular in this country.
I mean the administration, hands down.
I think there is such a thing as entitlement.
Pads, you know, you can think of a plethora of reasons.
And I see it quite often when the men jump in front of me to lift things or to back a truck onto a trailer or anything like that.
There's just a big struggle for respect
in employment and assignments that we're given, and pay that was given.
I think equal, like, there's no equal pay at all.
Women have to work so much harder to get to the point that men can easily get to.
How would you define what a woman is?
How would I define what a woman is?
Oh my God!
I think a woman, well, that's a trick question.
Oh wow.
I think a woman is anything that she wants to be defined as.
Well, that's a good question. Let me think about that.
A human being. She's an individual.
A woman is powerful. A woman is really the creator of our society. Without women, like, we won't even be able to reproduce the planet.
Like, we're selling uterus pins, but that doesn't mean that if you have a uterus, you're a woman, or if you don't have one, you're not a woman.
So I think a woman is someone who chooses to express themselves.
We can express our womanhood in so many ways that it is just unfathomable.
Well, can be in the feminine way, but also can be in a non-binary way as well.
Wow. How would I define what a woman is? There's so many aspects.
A woman is love and strength and power.
I in a short interview, I'm not even sure how to answer that.
A woman is anyone that identifies as a woman. Simple as that.
I think a woman is, like, if you identify as a woman, if you want to be a woman, then you're a woman.
Are there any innate differences between men and women today?
I don't know how to answer that question, actually.
Do you think that anyone can be a woman?
Anyone probably could be a physical woman if they would like to.
If they want to.
Yes. I think it's a choice.
Yes. Yes, because I think it's a mindset.
I think anybody can be a woman.
Can anyone be a woman?
I think it's a process.
Yeah.
How would you define what a woman is?
Are you displaying or you selling? Primarily concerned for the welfare of children.
Okay, so there you go. And you know, we heard some good answers and some things that are definitely true about women, but also some really puzzling answers, you know, that that's a trick question, and anyone who wants to be a woman is a woman, anyone can be a woman, it's a choice, it's a mindset, things that just don't really make a whole lot of sense. And I think that's really a large part of what J.K. Rowling was getting at in her tweets. And so in response to the firestorm that was brought down on her, a couple days later, she actually published a full essay on her website, jkrowling.com. That's where you can read the full piece that she wrote about her reasons for speaking out on sex and gender issues. And it does contain inappropriate language, and I don't agree with everything that she says. But it was just like a breath of fresh air to hear someone just of her fame and recognition not being afraid to speak out on this issue and to speak some truth into the public square on this. And it's a pretty lengthy piece. There's a lot of good things in it. So I'm just going to pull some bits and pieces from it that I wanted to highlight that she wrote in response to all the backlash that she received. So she starts out by saying, "I expected the threats of violence, to be told I was literally killing trans people with my hate, to be called all sorts of really inappropriate names that I won't repeat, and for my books to be burned. What I didn't expect in the aftermath of my cancellation was the avalanche of emails and letters that came showering down upon me, the overwhelming majority of which were positive, grateful, and supportive. They came from a cross-section of kind, empathetic, and intelligent people, some of them working in fields dealing with gender dysphoria and trans people who are deeply concerned about the way a socio-political concept is influencing politics, medical practice, and safeguarding. They're worried about the dangers to young people, gay people, and about the erosion of women's and girls' rights. Above all, they're worried about a climate of fear that serves nobody, least of all trans youth, well." She goes on to write, "So why am I doing this? Why speak up? Why not quietly do my research and keep my head down?" Firstly, I have a charitable trust that focuses on alleviating social deprivation in Scotland with a particular emphasis on women and children. Among other things, my trust supports projects for female prisoners and for survivors of domestic and sexual abuse. I also fund medical research into MS, a disease that behaves very differently in men and women. It's been clear to me for a while that the new trans activism is having a significant impact on many of the causes I support because it's pushing to erode the legal definition of sex and replace it with gender. The second reason is that I'm an ex-teacher and the founder of a children's charity, which gives me an interest in both education and safeguarding. Like many others, I have deep concerns about the effect the trans rights movement is having on both. The third is that, as a much-banned author, I'm interested in freedom of speech and have publicly defended it, even unto Donald Trump. The fourth is where things start to get truly personal. I'm concerned about the huge explosion in young women wishing to transition and also about the increasing numbers who seem to be detransitioning because they regret taking steps that have, in some cases, altered their bodies irrevocably and taken away their fertility. Some say they decided to transition after realizing they were same-sex attracted and that transitioning was partly driven by homophobia either in society or in their families. Most people probably aren't aware, I certainly wasn't, until I started researching this issue properly, that 10 years ago, the majority of people wanting to transition to the opposite sex were male. That ratio has now reversed. The UK has experienced a 4,400% increase in girls being referred for transitioning treatment. The same phenomenon has been seen in the United States. In 2018, American physician and researcher Lisa Littman set out to explore it. In an interview, she said, quote, "Parents online were describing a very unusual pattern of transgender identification where multiple friends and even entire friend groups became transgender identified at the same time. I would have been remiss had I not considered social connotation and peer influences as potential factors." She goes on to explain her fifth reason for being deeply concerned about the consequences of the current trans activism, in which she describes her experience as being a sexual assault survivor. And she writes, "I'm mentioning these things now not in an attempt to garner sympathy, but out of solidarity with the huge numbers of women who have histories like mine, who've been slurred as bigots for having concerns around single-sex spaces." She goes on to write towards the end of her essay, "Like every other domestic abuse and sexual assault survivor I know, I feel nothing but empathy and solidarity with trans women who've been abused by men. So I want trans women to be safe. At the same time, I do not want to make girls and women less safe. When you throw open the doors of bathrooms and changing rooms to any man who believes or feels he's a woman, and, as I've said, gender confirmation certificates may now be granted without any need for surgery or hormones, then you open the door to any and all men who wish to come inside. That is the simple truth." And here's where this is so good. This is reading from the end of her essay now. She writes, "It would be so much easier to tweet the approved hashtags because, of course, trans rights are human rights, and of course, trans lives matter. Scoop up the woke cookies and bask in a virtue signaling afterglow. There's joy, relief, and safety in conformity. Huge numbers of women are justifiably terrified by the trans activists. I know this because so many have gotten in touch with me to tell their stories. They're afraid of doxing, of losing their jobs or their livelihoods, and of violence. But as endlessly unpleasant as its constant targeting of me has been, I refuse to bow down to a movement that I believe is doing demonstrable harm in seeking to erode women as a political and biological class and offering cover to predators like few before it. I stand alongside the brave women and men, gay, straight, and trans, who are standing up for freedom of speech and thought and for the rights and safety of some of the most vulnerable in our society. Young gay kids, fragile teenagers, and women who are reliant on and wish to retain their single-sex spaces." And lastly, she concludes her essay with this, "All I'm asking, all I want, is for similar empathy, similar understanding to be extended to the many millions of women whose sole crime is wanting their concerns to be heard without receiving threats and abuse." So this was really important. This was a big deal, and I think it's good for J.K. Rowling for not backing down, for standing up for what she believes in and speaking the truth. And I think there's a lot of lessons to take away from this, because we know that men and women are fundamentally different from each other and yet complementary. People are born genetically with clear male or female chromosomes. Indeed, sexual identity is written into the DNA of every cell in our bodies, and as such, our biological sex is intricately interwoven with how we live in society and relate to others. But I think in a large part, as J.K. Rowling demonstrated, we can speak the truth and stand for truth in a grace-filled and compassionate way. As men and women made in the image of God, transgender-identifying individuals deserve our respect, compassion, and care as neighbors whom we should love as ourselves. And that is all the time we have for this week. To stay up to date on the latest news impacting family, freedom, and life, and to learn how you can partner with Nebraska Family Alliance to defend life, religious freedom, and family values, visit our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.